Welcome to the original Italian-American podcast, Keeping It Real with Frankie D, and the home of the Italian-American moment, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com. My guest today is Dr. Lou Ignoto, who was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1998 in medicine. Dr. Lou, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Frank. It's so great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, it's an honor to have you and to hear all about this. Let's get started with, I know you're from Brooklyn, but tell us about, you know, your upbringing there, what it was like. Was it heavily Italian? Where your parents are from in Italy? All about your background.
Oh, of course. I'm happy to do that and proud to do that. My parents were both born in Italy. My dad was born in Napoli, and my mom was born in Sicilia, and actually in Panarea, which is one of the Aeolian Islands just north of the mainland of Sicily. And so they didn't know each other in Italy, but they moved independently to Brooklyn, New York in the 1930s. They met one another there. They got together. A couple of years later, they got married. And then I came along in 1941. One of the things about my parents was that when they were in Italy, my dad was a carpenter and a shipbuilder. My mom took care of her seven brothers and sisters. And the point I want to make is that neither one went to school. Neither my father nor my mom went to any kind of schooling whatsoever. They moved to the US, they met, they got married, I came along. And of course, since they spoke only Italian at home, that's what I spoke. So this was not a problem at the beginning, but when I entered school in kindergarten and the first grade, then there was a serious problem because my English was terrible.
Did you, were you able to keep up the language over the years?
A little bit. Certainly at the beginning, for the first 20 years of my life, and no problem whatsoever. In fact, in high school, I took an Italian class, my language class, in order to refine the Italian I knew. You know, my dad spoke with a Neapolitan accent. My mom spoke Sicilian Italian, which many Italians don't even believe is Italian. And so I went to school to try to speak it properly, and I was able to do that. But then, you know, when you don't use the language for so many years, you forget it. So capisco ma non parlo bene. So I can understand Italian, I can read most of it, and I can speak it only after some red Brunello wine. That's it.
Okay. Hai fatto dei viaggi in Italia? Sei stato mai in Italia?
Yes. I mean, it was tough at the beginning, but I was able to do it.
Were you able to visit your parents' hometowns in Italy?
Oh, yes. When we were, I have a brother 3 years younger. When we were younger, my parents took us by ship all the way to Italy. I think I was 10 or 12 years old, and we visited, you know, where he was from, where she was from, and visited all the people. Then again, when I was a teenager, I went back as well. And I have to tell you that from that point on, for the next 40 years, I hadn't been back. But because of the work that I do, I got so many invitations to go back to Italy that I usually get a chance to go two or three times every year, and I love it.
Wow, that's excellent. Okay, excellent, excellent. And I was going to say, your mom's town, like I know in Chicago, I never heard of anybody coming from that area of Sicily. So I don't know if like growing up in New York, there was a lot of her paisani that had settled there in Brooklyn?
Not really. From that tiny island, that's the island that she was from, was so small that you could, no cars allowed, you could row a boat around the island in about 4 hours. That's how small it was. So she She did not understand the rest of the world. She knew nothing until she moved to New York. The reason she moved to New York was because her dad wanted to actually move to California in order to op build a farm and a grocery store. He was into produce. They stopped in New York in order to save some money, get a fresher breath air, a breath of fresh air, and then plan to move to California. Then my dad met my mom in Brooklyn, and of course kept her there. They got married, and then the rest of the family moved to California. But the point I wanted to make is that most of my mom's relatives, if not everyone, moved to Australia instead of New York. So there were very few Russos and Tesoreros and those people in America. They all went to Australia for some reason.
Growing up where you did, what were you surrounded by a lot of Italian people in that neighborhood?
There were lots of Italians. Yes. Now, where I was born, lots of Italian people. And my dad was a carpenter. We lived in Long Beach, Long Island, which is about 15 miles east of Brooklyn. So my dad did all his work in Long Beach, where we lived. In that town, there were very, very few Italians. In fact, it was 90% Jewish. I mean, that's where the people came from the war in the 1940s. They wanted to find a place they could settle down and and not be bothered by anyone. You know how it was back then. So they settled in Long Beach. My dad didn't know that. He wanted to settle in a place where there were Italians, but that was not the case in Long Beach. So we visited very frequently, at least once a week. We would take the train to Brooklyn to be with all the Italian relatives.
Did you go to high school then in the you said it's called Long Beach?
Long Beach, yes.
And were you in high
It's Long
school?
Beach is right on Long Island. So I went to grade school there, and I went to Long Beach High School there. And when I graduated Long Beach High School, I went to college nearby. It's about an hour ride by train into New York City. I went to Columbia College, which is there. I stayed at home and commuted.
Okay, a question I was curious about. So your parents not having an education background at all, zero. So now they're in America, they have a son. Did they push you towards education, or was it kind of the opposite where you don't need education, go to work?
No, it was completely pushing me to education. See, my dad worked so hard. And he used to come home at night, his fingers were bleeding from being a carpenter. He was a carpenter, a mason. He did everything, built homes, built furniture. And as a kid, I remember distinctly growing up, he would tell me, and my parents would tell me, "Son, I do not want you to be a laborer like me. Look at my hands. I don't want you to be like me. I want you to go to school. I want you to be somebody. I want you to be a doctor or a lawyer." He said, "I want you to be anybody, but no politician. I don't want no politician in this house." He always said that. So he encouraged me, even though he knew so little because of lack of education. He had the smarts, the intelligence, to know that the way forward is to go through school and college. So he worked so hard, saved his money, tried to keep my brother and I on the correct side of the tracks. You got to be careful when you're in New York or anywhere around New York. A lot of gangs back then in the 40s. But he managed to do that. He managed to encourage me to continue to go to school, to maintain my interest, and the rest is history. So that worked.
Well, they did a hell of a job, that's for sure. You obviously have had such success in your career. And did your ethnic background, do you think that had any effect on these achievements that you were able to do?
Well, I knew a lot of Italians. But I must admit that the Italians I knew, were not prominent in terms of, let's say, most of them were not doctors. They were not lawyers. They were laborers, carpenters, people like that. Some of my other friends who were not Italian, their families were all doctors, lawyers, and so on. And so I often, wondered about that. How come all the Italians I know have not gone on to school and to do things like that? I could never figure it out, but it was the motivating factor that I had. I said, I'm Italian, but I have this tremendous interest in science. I was always interested in science when I was in school. And I decided, Italian or not Italian, I don't want to be a carpenter. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to do science. And so I directed my education through pathways that got me to become educated in the sciences.
It
Very few
almost,
Italians with that interest.
I'm sure there were, and it almost, now learning more about you, this is just a thought, an opinion, but it's almost like because you went to school with non-Italians in this area, that seemed like maybe it was a lot of people that were motivated and, reaching for the stars of success in those fields. Maybe that had an impact on your life as well.
No, it did. It had a big impact on my life. First of all, in the first few years of elementary school, I was scared. I mean, I used to have diarrhea sometimes because my English was bad. All the students were doing better than I was. I used to listen to these students, speak in class and give book reports. And then under my breath, I would say, Lou, you're such a dummy. I mean, you're just not like these people. You're going to have to really step up to the plate and learn. And that's how I motivated myself. I used to practice speaking in front of a mirror to speak properly. And I would speak with some of my neighbors because some of my neighbors who were, my mom would get them to tutor me in school. And then I would communicate with them and I'd say, sir, you're tutoring me in mathematics, but how can I speak better? And so on. And so he would light me up with somebody else. And so I sought that. I went after that so I could learn to communicate better. But you know how long that took? It took me until I got into high school before I could reach a level where I knew that I was on par with my classmates.
Made you work
But
harder.
I knew how to do it. I wanted to do it.
Exactly. I love to hear about, so you received the Nobel Prize in 1998. That's just like mind-boggling, to be honest with you. That's an incredible achievement. And just, tell us about the experience, like just from, I mean, did you have any idea? How did they notify you? Is this like a formal affair? Do you get a piece of paper in the mail? How does this work with the Nobel Prize?
Okay, sure. Well, it's a long process, but I'll make it very brief, of course. But, we as scientists, we are aware that there is such a thing as a Nobel Prize. And you have one in medicine, which was my area. There's also one in chemistry, which is a little bit outside my area, but close. And then there's one in physics, which I could never understand anyway. So, and then of course, we have one in literature, we have one in economics, and we have one in peace. Everybody knows the Peace Prize. So, you do your work, you're a scientist, you hear from others, you're doing a good job. I'm publishing my work in good journals. And every once in a while, somebody will come over to me and say, Lou, you keep this up, you're going to get the Nobel Prize. And I would say, no, I don't want to hear that. That's too much pressure. I'm not doing my work because I want the Nobel Prize. I'm doing my work because I love to do this work. I want to publish this work. I want to help people who have cardiovascular disease because that was my area of expertise. I said, don't bother me with this Nobel Prize stuff, okay? And then, sure enough, comes a day in 1998 when the announcement comes. that I've been awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine. The way it works is that there are committees in Stockholm, Sweden, at an institute called the Karolinska Institute. It's like the Harvard University in Sweden, for example. And there are committees there who every day look at all the scientists throughout the world, and they spend every day on these committees deciding, okay, who are we going to award the Nobel Prize to come December? Every December is when the Nobel Prize is awarded. But they announce the Nobel Prizes in October, the first week in October every year. That's been traditional since 1901, when the first Nobel Prize was awarded. But I don't hang around every first week in October waiting, because that's silly. I want it's too much pressure. I don't want to do it, even though I heard from many others, oh, one day you'll get it, this and that. So anyway, they made the announcement, and where was I? I was not home. I had accepted an invitation from an Italian friend of mine, Giuseppe Cherino, from the University of Napoli, to go there to give a lecture. This was the interim break. I teach medical students in the fall, but there was a week break in between exams. So I accepted an invitation to go give a talk in Naples, and it was when I was there that the announcement was made, and it was mind-boggling. I mean, everybody in the university, everybody in the country thought I lived in Italy because of my name. So I was visited by the mayor, the governor, you name it, they were there bringing Marinella ties and all kinds of pastries and everything else. It was just the greatest. I couldn't explain that feeling good enough, so that people could appreciate. But it was a great feeling that I not only that I was awarded the prize, but that I was in Italy in my father's hometown, where he was born and raised in Naples, when I heard about the prize. I mean, it does not get better than that.
You couldn't have scripted it any better.
No, it's funny. It's so hilarious. It's just great.
So in December, do you go to Sweden then? Is there a
Yes.
type of formal event? Tell us a little about it.
Right. Once the announcement is made in October, you have just a couple of months to prepare. The Nobel Prize ceremony, where the laureates receive their Nobel Prizes, is always on December 10 of the year, because December 10 is the anniversary of Alfred Nobel's death. So the ceremony is always on December 10th. And so they invite you, you go there. I brought my wife, of course, members of my family. You're allowed to bring about 20, 25 guests. So I brought, the dean of the medical school, the president of the university, all this garbage, because I was going to go after him later to ask him for some money. So I'd be sure, I had to be sure I took care of him during the ceremony. And so the ceremony was on December 10th, and it was just the most incredible experience I ever had. When the king calls me by name, and he pronounced my name correctly, believe it or
Yaddle.
not, in Italian, yes. And I get up and I walk over to him on stage with all these people in the audience, and he congratulates me and gives me the Nobel Prize, and he puts it in my hands. I mean, the first thing that happened, it was just tears rolling down. It was the greatest. And I felt great. You know why? Because so few Italians have been awarded the Nobel Prize. And for me to be Italian, to get the prize, and think about my mom and dad, who never went to school, and all they wanted from me was to be successful in anything I do. I mean, all these things go through your head, and you just feel great about it.
Well, that's great, and I love your pride. And the one person I think of is Enrico Fermi, and I believe he got the prize in physics.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
want to say it was 36 or 39. I can't, it was one of those.
Yeah, something like that. Yes, that's true. I don't remember all the dates, but he got it in physics, and you know what kind of an invention he came up with. I mean, it's very, very important.
Absolutely. Okay, a couple little stupid questions.
No question stupid.
I'm a curious guy. Is it an actual, like a plaque that you receive?
No, actually what it is, let's see if I have it here. I'm going to stretch back. Hold on one second.
Yeah, I would think you'd keep that very close to you in your office.
Yes.
Oh.
It is a 24 carat gold medal, and it's got Alfred Nobel in front, and in back it's got the symbol for medicine, and can't read it, but my name is on the bottom.
With the date?
So once in a while I look at this to be sure that it's really me who has the prize. But this is what the Nobel Prize looks like.
Yes.
And it's really nice to have.
Did you make a speech? Does the recipient make a speech?
Oh yeah. The when you receive the Nobel Prize on stage, you don't make a speech. You don't say anything. No thank you, no nothing. Sit back down. But then after that, there are sessions where each of the Nobel laureates makes a speech and gives a 1 hour presentation of their discoveries, but so that the layperson could understand it, because many people in the audience are not scientists. Okay, so that's how they do that.
Okay, and that's a good segue into your groundbreaking discovery of nitric oxide. And I'm going to ask you to put it in a real layman's terms of what you did.
Okay, so what we discovered, when I was a kid, a teenager, in high school and also in grade school, I often wondered why some people got heart attacks and strokes, whereas other people were perfectly healthy and didn't get heart attacks and strokes. And I would ask my physician friends, well, I was young, but you know, I would ask my physician and my friend's physician. Nobody could answer that question. So I came up with an idea that was not based on any experimentation, that maybe those people who are healthy produce a molecule in the body that somehow protects us against heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. And so I kept it in my mind as I was doing my basic research in cardiovascular physiology. And sure enough, in the 1980s, my laboratory made the discovery that yes, we produce a small molecule that protects us against cardiovascular disease. And that molecule we identified as nitric oxide. This is not nitrous oxide. Nitrous oxide is laughing gas. That's a different molecule. This one is nitric oxide, very simple. One element of nitrogen and one element of oxygen. So it's NO. So we can call it nitric oxide or simply NO. So we discovered that our bodies, our blood vessels, produce nitric oxide. And this nitric oxide lowers the blood pressure. In other words, prevents high blood pressure. It prevents the arteries from getting cholesterol plaques. So it prevents coronary artery disease. And this molecule also protects your entire cardiovascular system and liver so that you don't get diabetes. So because of that, I was awarded the Nobel Prize in medicine. That's the simplest I could explain.
No, I appreciate that. That was excellent. That was excellent. Thank you so much. I've read that this work ultimately led to the development of Viagra. That's correct?
Yeah, that's a great story, I think. Yes, it did.
Definitely, definitely. And also you mentioned nitric oxide, NO. So you wrote a book that's called Dr. NO. So I'm
Yeah,
assuming that's to do with that.
Doctor No. Well, because I wanted to sound like Doctor No, the James Bond movies
Yes, that's what I was
to
thinking of.
attract attention. And so since the abbreviation for nitric oxide is NO, I figured, let's call it Doctor No. And even my license plate in California, one of them says Doctor
Oh,
No.
that's great. That's great.
But
And
the other car, you want to know the license plate on my other car, my
what's
sports
that?
car? You won't believe it. Nobel,
No.
NOBEL.
Wow,
The
that's
plate,
great.
it was available in California, so I got
That's excellent. Excellent.
it.
And your book, you were telling me earlier, it's somewhat of a autobiography.
Yeah, it's a memoir. It explains my life. How a child of Italian immigrant, uneducated parents was able to overcome all these obstacles and climb to the top of his profession and get awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine. So the book takes the reader through that entire span from when I was born until I received the Nobel Prize in Stockholm, and explains some of the science, but in layman's terms, so that any reader could understand it.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I definitely want to read that book. Also, you have taught at many universities as well, correct?
That's correct.
And that you were telling me earlier about you just enjoy that aspect of.
Yes, I do. I love to teach. There's so much science out in the world, and unfortunately, different from other subjects, most people don't know too much about science. And unfortunately, most people are not interested in science because they think that they cannot understand it. Well, science is very, very logical, which means if it's logical, anybody can understand it. It just has to be explained in a way in which people can understand it. And so I love to teach. I've always liked to communicate information to students. And so I felt it was my obligation to teach medical students and graduate students, even undergraduate students in college and high school, all about science the best way I could in order to get them interested in a career in science. And so I did that for years and years. And I guess I was pretty good at it because I did receive many teaching awards given out by the students, not by the faculty. So I was just as proud of my teaching accomplishments as I was about my basic research accomplishments.
Well, that's
Teaching is
wonderful.
important.
It absolutely is. Being a mentor is one of the most important things a person can do. And I used to know the exact quote by Lee Iacocca, who made a quote about being a mentor. And I really enjoyed it because I think it's we had a mentoring program at the high school by me, and I was a mentor to freshmen in high school for many, many
Oh,
years.
fantastic.
And I
Oh,
really thoroughly
great.
enjoyed it. As you said, I love helping in teaching and hopefully guiding in the right direction young people.
Yes. Yeah, that's
Absolutely.
so important to do.
A few other things I wanted to mention about you, not that I, totally understand what they are, but you are a pharmacologist. I mean, I'm being totally
Yeah.
honest. Pharmacologist, pharmacology is the science of drugs and medications. You are founder of the Nitric Oxide Society and founder and editor
Yes.
of Nitric Oxide Biology and Chemistry. That's
Yes.
right.
When we made the discovery that our bodies produce nitric oxide, at the time we made the discovery, we knew it was important, but I did not know that it would wind up with a Nobel Prize, although my colleagues said, because of this discovery, Lou, you are going to get that prize, whether you like it or not, down the line. And so I decided, all right, let's start the Nitric Oxide Society, where we can get together all young investigators, young scientists, try to provide funds for them to go to meetings and learn more about nitric oxide and so on. So I created that society. And out of that society, I created a scientific journal. There are many different kinds of journals in medicine. like the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of this, of that. So I created the Journal of Nitric Oxide Research. That became very popular. Many people published their work in that journal. And so we just built a very nice nitric oxide society. And to this day, we have a different international meeting every single year in a different country. It's great the way that blossomed.
That's incredible. One question I got to ask you is, your parents, when they passed, at what point of your career were you at that they were able to see your successes?
Yeah. Well, my dad lied to my mom when they got married. He was 20 years older than my mom. He looked young, good genes. But although he died at the age of 96, that was in the mid 1980s. So he could see that I developed into a scientist. He could see I had my own big laboratory. In a university setting, I had him sit in the back in one of my lectures. So he was very happy, very proud. My mom was much younger. In fact, when the Nobel Prize was announced in October of 1998, as I told you earlier, I was in Italy. I was not home. However, my mom was home. So the news media bombarded her house, and she gave interviews for the next 2 days to all the local newspapers and TV, and she loved it. She just loved it to talk about her son. She was healthy enough in 1998 that my wife and I took her to Stockholm. So she got all dressed up, she went to Stockholm, and she was right at the ceremony when I was awarded the Nobel Prize.
Well,
And she
that
got
couldn't
a
have been.
chance to talk to other Nobel Prize winners and the king and the queen. She was ecstatic. And what she kept saying that whole day and the next day is, "Oh, I wish daddy was still alive. I wish daddy was still alive." It was great.
Oh, that had to have been just icing on the cake, so to speak, for that you were awarded it. Mother
Unbelievable.
was able to be there and
Yeah.
enjoy it all
I mean,
with.
you know how Italians are. Italians bond together. There's nothing like family. And, and that's the way we celebrated and still celebrate
Well, your parents must have
all the
been,
26 years later.
sure, your parents must have been through the roof with pride of your accomplishments. That goes
Oh
without
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. It goes without saying.
I saw a quote of yours, and I would like to read it if it's okay. In 2000, while testifying before Congress, you said,
Yeah.
"Only in America could the son of an uneducated carpenter receive the Nobel Prize in Medicine." That's an excellent quote.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that a great quote?
That's a
Because I was
tremendous quote.
there. Several of us were trying to convince Congress to increase the budget to support basic biomedical research in the United States. And we were there for 2 days, and the subcommittee of Congress kept asking questions like, why should we support what you're saying to increase the budget to do research when we have to support housing and we have to support this and that? There are many other things in the government, we got to support. What is so special about supporting biomedical research? And I didn't know what kind of an answer to give them. And so the answer I gave them was, I said, listen, I said, Congress people, only in America can the son of an uneducated immigrant Italian go on to win the Nobel Prize. In other words, in America, America gave me the opportunity to do this work, to benefit humankind, and go on to receive the Nobel Prize. We need to increase the budget so that other young people can have the same opportunity that I did, and we can do this only in America. So please, 6 months later, the budget was doubled.
Oh, that's
How's
excellent.
that?
Wow, that's great. That's great. You're a convincer, that's for sure. Dr. Lou, I'm almost speechless, but I can't be speechless because this is a audio podcast. So your accomplishments are amazing. your entire career that's still going. You're still a you seem like you're about 61 years old. I can see the you're very vibrant, you're very enthusiastic, you're very ready to go. I love that.
Yes.
You're an author, you're a teacher, you're a Nobel Prize winner. And you know what? I think maybe one of the best things about you, you just are a good man. You're a good gentleman. I could tell. I can really tell.
Well, thanks very much, Frank. I really appreciate it. I try to be like that all my life.
And you know what? And I always appreciate someone that represents us, Italian-Americans, so well as you do. And I thank you for that, because every time you go you represent us, and we're fortunate to have you.
Always, 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 always.
Well, thank you for everything. And especially this interview, it has been truly an honor to talk with you.
Well, thanks very much, Frank. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be here. Thank you.